Amid New England's White Mountains is one of the largest living laboratories in the United States, the Hubbard Brook Experimental Forest.
I'm a scientist, and this is my laboratory. So,
lucky you.
Yeah, exactly, lucky me. I've always said I can't believe somebody pays me to work in such a beautiful place.
That's Gene Likens, co-founder of the Hubbard Brook Ecosystem Study. Hubbard Brook is one of 79 experimental forests and ranges under the Federal Forest Service. Likens, along with three other scientists, worked with the Forest Service to begin studying Hubbard Brook back in 1963. They were among the first to identify acid rain. Likens met us at the forest to talk about that and some of the other research that's taking place there. He's now in his 80s, yet he remains in awe of this forest, which he calls an almost paradise, as there are no ticks here and no poison ivy.
We're surrounded by a very large diversity of plants and animals. The system is mind-boggling in its complexity, if you will. There are 127 species of birds that live in this forest in the summertime. There are 27 species of trees that live here. And we started in 1963.
And so how many studies would you say that you've done here over 50 years?
There have been something like 1,500 scientific papers that have been published from the work here. There's probably 7 or 8 books. The long-term nature of these studies, now the water chemistry and precipitation chemistry are the longest in the world, as far as I know, continuous records in the world. And the insights that we get from those long-term records are just so informative and valuable that I don't know how we could have gotten them any other way.
What are some of the questions that you want answered in those experiments?
Started with a fairly simple metaphor, and that was, could we get our minds around this complexity, something like a physician does when he's dealing with a human patient? So if you measure the chemistry of blood and urine, you have some idea of how the patient is doing. And if you see some change in the blood or urine chemistry, then you're going to have to go inside and look at the kidneys and the lungs. And so we ask, well, could we possibly measure the chemistry of stream water draining this complex landscape? And if that chemistry changed or was unusually different, could we use that to be an indicator of what was going on in the metaphoric sense? And it worked. We were able to do that.
Is there something in this area right here, right next to Hubbard Brook, that's going on right now in terms of research that you could explain to us?
We're looking at the main river channel near where it exits into the Pemigewasset River. As you look down into the river at this point, there are these huge boulders that are so typical of streams in this area. And as you look more carefully, you can see where in the past, sometime or other, the water has been much higher. You see how it's scoured on the far shoreline? And so I've actually been at this point when the water level was almost near the top of this stream bank. And you could actually hear boulders boom, 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 being moved along by all that flow. So it's very difficult to measure that flow. Well, there is a measuring device installed here so we can measure when a storm comes through or when it's very dry like it is now. We also take samples of the water and analyze it chemically. So this is the endpoint for the whole valley.
And what about climate change? What do you've been here for 50 years. It's the topic.
Climate change is happening. Our long-term records show that the air temperature is getting warmer, the soil temperatures are getting warmer, it's getting wetter here, and the records are now long enough to show that quite clearly during the period in which we've been analyzing. One example, there's a small lake at the base of the valley called Mirror Lake, beautiful lake, and we've been studying the ice cover on the lake. And so since our studies began in the mid-1960s, The period of ice cover has decreased on average about 24 days. So it's 24 days less ice cover on the lake today than it was in the mid-1960s. This past year, the ice froze on the lake very late, and it melted off very early, and we had the shorter by 15 days than it had ever been before. So major changes.
When you look at this, at how low it is, I mean, what happens in a drought situation? And have you done any studies about water supply?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because we're in a drought situation now this summer.
Right. And the White Mountains are a water source. It flows into the Pemigewasset River and ultimately into the Merrimack. Yeah, we've done a lot of work on how much water is actually evaporated by these trees. But on the other hand, all that liquid water that gets converted by these tree leaves by evapotranspiration to the atmosphere can't carry with it nutrients out of the system. So it's a nutrient conservation mechanism as well, and it's also a way in which erosion is reduced. The point of that very quickly is that it's very complicated.
And what about acidification, right? Acid rain. Well, what happened there?
The very first sample of rainfall we collected in July of 1963 was surprisingly acid. It was about 100 times more acidic than we thought it should be, although we didn't know how acidic it should be. Nobody did at that time. And that was a great shock to us. We wondered, well, could that be something unique to the White Mountains of New Hampshire, or what? What is causing this? And it took us then until 1972, those 9 years before we felt comfortable in publishing that first paper.
Mm-hmm. And where does it stand now?
Very interestingly, we found that acid rain is a problem that causes severe environmental degradation of freshwater lakes and streams, of forests like this, and even the soils. Then in 1990, the first George Bush signed into law the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments, which focused for the first time on acid rain and trying to resolve the problem. So from 1963 to 1990, 27 years, it took before there was political action to try to deal with the problem. There have been comments made, and I'm not a politician, I'm not going to go there, but there have been comments made about rolling back the federal legislation we have for air pollution.
Right.
And we fought that battle here in New England a long time ago when our acid rain pollutants were coming from the Midwest, primarily from electrical utilities, which were contributing about 70% of the sulfur dioxide to the atmosphere and the combustion of fossil fuels to make electricity. And that was being dumped on us as acid rain, us here in New England as acid rain. Well, if we were to roll back those regulations, wow, you know, if we were to roll those things back, our water quality could change dramatically, and the effects on our vegetation could be very dramatic. As a result of the various procedures to try to reduce air pollution to the atmosphere that causes acid rain, and that's primarily sulfur and nitrogen oxides that are emitted when we combust coal and oil, that has declined by about 80%. Since 1963, our first measurements. But the problem is not going away, because through this long-term adding of those acids from the atmosphere to the soils, we've depleted a lot of the buffering capacity of the soils. It's like you have a sour stomach and you take Rolaids or Tums, and you've used up all the Tums in your stomach, and so a little bit of acidity now can still give you a bad problem.
And again, just clarify for me, why is the soil so sensitive, and why wouldn't it adapt?
Because this is the Granite State, after all, and so the rocks are hard, And so there's very little buffering capacity. If we were in Vermont, where there's a lot more limestone, the buffering capacity would be much higher. Their rhodades and buffer and tums content is much higher.
What's a major study that you would like to see completed? What is there, you know, what's the big work going on right now, or something that you would like to see happen in the future?
We haven't finished acid rain, but here's the one that I think really I would like to see play out, and it's going to very soon. Because of the air quality advances that we made, the water is almost like distilled water. And that, we think, is because we've leached so much out of the soils and the incoming precipitation doesn't have much of anything in it, that we don't have much contributing to the chemistry of that stream, or all the streams in the valley. We can't have streams that are full of distilled water. Everything would die if they were in distilled water. We all require chemicals, nutrients, to live. So our projections show that that's going to happen very soon, within a few years to 10 years. Following that out, seeing where that's going to go and how that plays out, I think is a very, very important component.
What can you do in a situation like that?
I don't really know at this point. I think it will go to some level that will be very low in concentration, chemical concentration, but not to the distilled water level. We're not going to try to solve that problem by adding pollutants. That's not a good management strategy at all. It's very rare, I think, that a scientist is at the beginning of a problem, the discovery of a problem, and able to last long enough, I guess, to be around long enough to see some resolution to the problem. So I feel very fortunate that I've been around long enough to see that happen.
Thanks very much for taking us out here and showing us around.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure. One of my favorite places.
Gene Likens, co-founder of the Hubbard Brook Ecosystem Study. You can read more about the forest in a new book co-authored by Likens and his colleague Richard Holmes. It's titled Hubbard Brook, The Story of a Forest Ecosystem. Stay with us. Coming up, the best and the worst of this summer's movies. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.